The Vienna Game, written by Paratactician, read by Code Switch. Chapter 13, Epilogue, End Run. 10 nights after the run on the palace, Selig's captor stood leaning on the tarnished brass rail above the harbor, smoking a cigarette and staring vaguely down at the slap of black waves on the stonework. The water looked almost oily, striped in rippling lines by the blue gleam of argon from the lamps. The air was salt-smeared, and just cold enough to need a jacket, but not so much that he'd had to zip it up. Pfeffery Pyxes had become Empress of Alternia, aged 10 sweeps and change, in only the 4th round of combat, the shortest duel of succession ever recorded in Alternian history, barring the one declared invalid due to unsanctioned use of particle weaponry. Palace assessors agreed that the incumbent had fought with courage and ferocity befitting her caste until the very end, but that the challenger's sheer speed had left the outcome in little doubt from the middle of round 2 onward. Her subsequent acclamation by the people, while technically irrelevant and not absolutely legal, had been widely seen as a heartening token for the Empire's future. She had sparked minor confusion, however, with her first official act post-investiture. The minute the prongs of death and life were placed in her hand, she had hurried out of the throne room, practically sprinted down 5 levels in the palace, a mob of bodyguards, advisors, courtiers, and journalists panting to keep up, burst into the medical wing, walked up to an occupied stasis cocoon, put the incalculable majesty of her sacred hand right on the occupant's clammy forehead, and said, "Salix, get up and stop being so lazy!" Salix hadn't seen any of this. He'd been filled in on the details later. His only role in the drama had been to open his eyes, spit cold soap or, take one look at her, and say weakly, "What the fuck are you wearing?" This, too, had caused a certain amount of comment, and, in fact, an overzealous sentry had attempted to cull him on the spot, but it had all been smoothed over in the end. He took another drag on the cigarette and said, "Hey." Teresi's grin was magnificent in the darkness as she materialized at his left elbow. "Very good. I was being careful." He turned his head to look at her properly. The best medical care the Empire could provide, coupled with teal blood physiology, had put her back on her feet inside 2 nights. Apparently she'd been front row at the duel, making a great deal of business with her white cane, smug and blind, in a seat with the best view in the house. Now there was hardly any sign she'd been hurt, except for a white plastic bone set tag jutting from the skin on the back of her left hand, which he kept telling her not to fiddle with. "How are you doing?" he asked, looking back out across the water. She propped her forearms on the rail. "I am sort of sad." "Yeah." He was sort of sad, too. He'd been sort of sad as soon as they dragged him out of the cocoon. They'd wanted to run 20 million tests, but he'd snatched 2 minutes to think by hiding in a medical supply closet and locking the door. The following morning, he and Teresi had met up with Rose and the Knight, or Dave, as Salix now knew him. A loose-limbed, hornless boy about his own age, whose oversized dark glasses did nothing to conceal his striking resemblance to the entity Rose had killed. They'd stood on a flat white rooftop, the 4 of them together, under a night sky full of glinting stars he hadn't recognized, while strange iridescent water poured from a dark vent beneath them in a long and faintly luminous cascade. It had been a nice place, weird but nice, with the static rumble of the falling water and the smell of flowers on the breeze. "They had to go," he said. "It was a whole thing, you know." "They could have stayed a bit longer," she said crossly. He shook his head. "You heard Rose. They wanted to get moving before the trail went cold." "Where are you going?" Teresi had asked, sounding small and sad in a way Salix had never heard, and Dave had said, hands in his pockets, "Road trip. We're all going to look for America." And Rose had shot him a killing glare that hadn't seemed to faze him at all, and Salix had suddenly realized the 2 of them had been doing this for a very long time indeed. "I'm worried," she said. "I don't know if he will be okay without me." "He'll be fine. They'll both be fine." "I don't like the sound of this scratch person. People with big white balls for heads are not to be trusted." "I don't think they're going after him to negotiate," he said. There had been a glint of something cold in Rose's eyes, and even Dave, who pretty clearly held above all other gods an absence of fucks given, had bitten the name off with a venom that hadn't been entirely laconic. "I get the impression those two charge 15% interest on debts owed, you know." "I wish they'd taken Jade and John." "Yeah, me too, kind of," he admitted. "But I can see the point. The throne's not going to be 100% stable for the first sweep or so, not till Feff gets her shit locked down and learns the ropes. She could use the backup in case anyone tries anything stupid." "I know, but..." And she sighed heavily, and dropped her chin onto her folded arms. "I miss him already. My head feels all weird and empty, and he's only been gone 2 nights." He didn't know what to say. He missed Rose, and she'd been hanging out in his brain for a perigee or less. He kept expecting her to say something arch or teasing whenever he got coffee or walked into a desk. Terezi, who'd had her own sarcastic passenger for so much longer, must feel she was missing a limb. "They'll be back," he said. In the end, it was all he could say. They promised. They're going to take out Scratch, round up the other AIs, the maid and whatever, and come back. It just might take a while. "I know," she said, still disconsolate. "I bet it's going to be ages, though." Rose had explained the situation on the rooftop. There had been 2 other second-generation AIs slaved to the Imperial Network when Salix unleashed the virus, the Maid, and the Page. They'd been less heavily protected than the Prince. Dirk, Rose said wryly, had always been her condescension's favorite. When their cell doors opened, they'd evidently seized the chance to escape. There was no trace of them anywhere on the system. Then there was a third AI, the Rogue, who'd never been in the palace at all. She'd slipped her leash some time ago. "She will be the hardest to locate, I think," Rose had said, and smiled like it was funny. She made an art form out of being difficult to find. "Yeah," David said. "Plus, the other two are fucking idiots." None of them had wanted to say goodbye, not Salix or Terezi, but not the other two either. They'd all stood rather awkwardly, saying, "So..." and "Yeah," until Dave had tried for a wisecrack, fallen well short, and sighed. "Fuck it," he'd said. "Yo, TZ. Present." And he'd reached up, hooked off the shades, and held them out. His eyes underneath glowed a vivid scarlet in the gloom. Terezi had just stared at him until he'd stepped forward and physically put the shades on her, settling them carefully on the bridge of her nose. "Strider vision," he'd said. "Now in glorious technicolor. Can't let you taste the rainbow if I'm gonna snatch it back after and hit you for a gold subscription. Should stop you walking into goddamn walls till I get back, anyhow." There'd been a moment's silence, then Terezi had lunged, grabbed his shirt front, and attempted to devour his face. Salix and Rose had swiveled simultaneously away to stare out across the great, shimmering ocean. "I'm going to throw up," Salix had said. "Not if I get there first," she had replied delicately. "Although, Salix, hold out your arm." He'd done so, and watched as she untied the purple ribbon from her hair, shook it out, and wound it carefully round his bony wrist. It had gone round several times before she tied off the trailing ends in a neat little bow. Then she'd patted his hand. "There," she said. "I know you don't like surprises. That should help a little." He peered at the ribbon, which looked like any old bit of purple fabric. Silky material, the ends a little bit frayed. "For real? It's gonna let me, see stuff before it happens?" "Well," she'd said, and put a cool hand on his cheek. "Some stuff, anyway." And she'd smiled with dark lips and stepped close. "I reckon she's going to look for Dirk," he said to the water. "The prince, while she's out there." Terezi looked at him curiously. "I thought you said he was destroyed." "Well, I don't know exactly what she did. Didn't look like any code I'd ever seen. But she's smart as fuck, and she told me once it was almost impossible to eradicate an AI completely." He scratched the back of his neck, round the metal ridge of the net socket. "I mean, Condi tried to delete her, and look how that fucking turned out. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a bit of smart-ass orange data floating around in the code gulf somewhere. I don't know." "She had better not resurrect the Striders," said Terezi decisively. "I have had quite enough unbeatable metal ninjas for one career. From now on, I intend to fight only small wrigglers and defenseless graze beasts." "Nah, don't think Striders would be Pheff's bag. She seems to reckon 6 foot of cyborg psychopath running a Zier-class defensive AI is all the protection she needs at the Mo, especially since that way she gets Mariam and the chainsaw as a package deal." "Friska Circuit, Defender of the Throne," said Terezi, and grinned again. "I bet she's furious." "I don't know," Selleck said. "I saw her last night. She seemed pretty into it. I think John's doing her some good. And Vantus is living a fucking wet dream. He gets to pace around yelling his idealistic Fairyland bullshit all day long, and Pheff just nods seriously and takes notes." He crushed the last half-inch of cigarette out on the rail, went to flick it into the water, and reconsidered, tucked it behind his ear instead. "Seriously," corrected Terezi, "and I gather Chancellor Vantus is not the only jumped-up lowblood with a fancy new job, Mr. Chief Architect." "It's no big thing, Terezi. I'm a glorified sysop. I'm probably going to spend half my time unfucking everyone's servers. I told Malfak he should keep the job, but he laughed like an asshole and said after what I did, he needed to lie down for a couple of sweeps." "I'm told you're going to have a suite of rooms at the palace." "Well, yeah. I mean, I've got to be on the ground for when that douche Ampora gets his bulge stuck in the USB port or whatever the fuck." "I'm told your rooms will be but a short elevator ride away from the Imperial apartments." "It's the accommodation wing of the palace. All the rooms are..." "Oh, Mr. Captor," she said in a sing-song voice. "I was trying to fix my husk top in nothing but this tiny see-through nightie, and it won't work, and now I'm all hot and bothered, and I really need a hand."
"Okay, shut the fuck up, hell creature. I'm pretty sure that's treason or something."
"Mr. Captor, I was playing with the router sprocket and it just popped out. Can you come upstairs and show me how to put it in?"
"Teasy, there's no such fucking thing as a router sprocket."
"Mr. Captor, I need a good hard drive. I wondered if you could oblige me."
"That does it," he said, and went for the throat. She knocked his arm away, cackling, but instead of pirouetting out of reach, she dived inside his guard and got her arms round him, squeezed him so tight it hurt, and buried her face in his t-shirt. After a moment's shock, he dropped the arm around her narrow shoulders and craned the thumb to fiddle with the wisps of hair behind her ear. They stood like that on the dockside for nearly a minute, in silence. "Terezi," he said, and stopped. He'd rehearsed this 20 times in as many hours, and then he decided it was a fucking stupid thing to say, and he'd put a bullet through it and dumped it out back. With her holding him like it was all she wanted to do, with her warmth and her nose digging into his chest, and the profound urge to stroke the back of her neck until the muscles went slack, he figured maybe the execution had been premature, only now the body had gone cold, and he had to haul it in again somehow. I was wondering." She didn't look up. "I mean, I know you've got a fuckload of stuff to do, and I know you like working alone, but, I mean, we kind of get on okay, and it seems sort of stupid to waste that. So, I didn't know if maybe we should get a place together or something." She was very still against him. Then she extricated her face, looked up at him through unreadable scarlet lenses, and said gently, "No, no, Mr. Captor, I don't think we should get a place together." Everything in his torso seemed to drop a couple of inches and 10 degrees at once. He swallowed and said, "Yeah, no, sorry, that was a really fucking stupid idea. God, I don't know what..." She gave him the widest grin he'd seen in a checkered history of extremely wide grins. "I think we should get a boat." "What?" She let go of him and skipped back a couple of steps. "A boat! I want a boat! I want a holiday and I want a boat! I have always wanted a boat! Did you know that 40% of Alternia's surface is ocean? 40%! And I've never been to any of it! It must be full of stuff!" "TZ," he said carefully, "it's full of fish." "Excellent! I love fish. They are delicious. I have terrorized the land-dwelling population for sweeps, and the fish have escaped my retribution. No longer. No corner of the sea will be safe from the hungry jaws of justice. And by justice, I mean me." "Oh my fucking God," he said, trying very hard not to smirk. "You're insane." Her face changed at that, went serious and bright, and she said, "Well, I need a good Moiril then, don't I?" They looked at each other. "Terezi." "Shush! You are an idiot, and idiots don't get to talk before smart people. You like working alone." She dropped her voice for that in what he guessed was meant to sound like him, although if he sounded anything like that, he was pretty sure someone would have told him to seek help by now. "I only liked working alone, Mr. Captor, because I hadn't found anyone worth working with." "But you're a fucking big shot now. Thess made you Exquisitioner. I saw the uniform on the hangar." "Yes, Kanaya told me," she said. "It doesn't sound nearly red enough. But yes, I am in charge now. I have been given a sacred mandate to reform the legislature, and I am going to carry that mandate out so hard they'll be bleeding for weeks. We are going to stop crimes now, Salix. That is my plan. We will not just hunt people the throne doesn't like. We will hunt people who are wrong. I am going to start with Low City and work out, and by the time I am finished, Alternia will know what justice tastes like."
"And by justice, you mean you?"
She frowned. "What? No, by justice, I mean justice. That's why I used a capital J. I don't want Alternia knowing what I taste like. That's just weird. But, what was I saying?"
"Justice," he said helpfully.
"Yes, lots of it. Justice for everyone. But the point is, Mr. Salix, chief architect, malnourished, useless Moiril captor, it's going to be you and I. You and I are going to turn this planet upside down for Pfefferi and put it back better." She grinned. "You hack, I'll stab."
He wasn't even bothering to fight the smirk now.
"And the boat fits in how exactly?" "Are you seriously telling me you don't want a mobile command center?" she demanded. "I think you are lying. I can smell it. I think your whole body wants a mobile command center. But that is just tough shit because first we are going on holiday. I am going to buy a bunch of cute bikinis and moonbathe all night and drink whiskey and teach myself to fish. And you are going to drive the boat."
"Why the fuck am I driving the boat?" he said.
Her entire body seemed to shiver for a second with suppressed glee.
"Because, Mr. Captor," she said, "you're a helmsman!"
And then she exploded into peals of loud, awful laughter that echoed off the harbor walls. Salix winced.
"Fuck! Stop it! Terezi, shut up! It wasn't even that funny!"
"Additional lies," she said happily, and grabbed his hand. "Come on, we're going bikini shopping."
"Like hell."
"How am I supposed to know if they look nice? You will need to tell me which ones are the most aesthetic. Thousands of trolls would kill for the job." So I wait till you find something totally obnoxious in like 6 clashing colors and a dragon pattern, and then tell you it's chic? Look, you have to buy me a drink for this shit. I won't make it, Teezy. I've had 2 near-death experiences. There's no fucking way I can survive a mall sober. She considered this. You make a very reasonable point. Revised plan. We will get drunk, then we will go bikini shopping, then we will buy a boat. What could possibly go wrong? He said, as deadpan as he could manage, which wasn't easy with the way his chest felt. She dragged him away down the harborside towards the spires of the shopping district, tall striated columns of blue and scarlet argon looming in the dim pre-dawn like so much frozen code, and out across the sea, an edge of sky was just beginning to grow light. The end.
Tears that ain't coming, all the moment the truth in your lies. When everything feels like the movies, yeah, you bleed just to know you're alive.
Author's notes. Take out of any old poem, romance, or legend, for instance Geoffrey of Monmouth or Don Belianis of Greece, those parts of the story which afford most scope for long descriptions. Put these pieces together and throw all the adventures you fancy into one tale. Then take a hero, whom you may choose for the sound of his name, and put him into the midst of these adventures. There let him work for 12 books, at the end it being necessary that the conclusion of an epic poem be fortunate. Receipt to make an epic poem, Alexander Pope, 1728. Thanks to Byzantien for patiently listening to me grumble, Isozyme for advising me on a point of science, Prune Scholar for taking me to the pub when I was stuck for ideas, Urban Anchorite for feedback, general kindness and support, and inspiring the Dark Beats Ghost joke in Chapter 12. All the artists who've drawn fan art for the story, but particularly Everking for providing me with covers for the OST. William Gibson for writing Neuromancer in the first place, and you for reading. Podficker's notes. This has been a huge, huge project. Thank you so much for listening all the way through if you've made it to the end. This is one of my very favorite pieces of fanfic in the entire world, and it's been a pleasure to do it. Thanks to Paratactician for writing an amazing story and having a blanket transformative works policy. If you like this story, please leave feedback for both Paratactician and for me, Code Switch, at Archive of Our Own. Thank you.